Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with the NFL. All right, those of us who are really awful gamblers, generally speaking, make two critical mistakes.
What are they?
We bet what we want to happen more often than what we think will happen. And two, we make the ridiculous assumption that our luck has to change. I mention this because that's my problem when it comes to evaluating Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, who moved to 6-0 last night after thumping the injury-riddled New York Giants 35-14 on Thursday Night Football. I'm a Chiefs fan, and I desperately want the Patriots dynasty to end. Let me be completely transparent. For years, I was envious of the fact that the great sports writer Bill Simmons had the privilege of being the national voice of the Patriots dynasty. Bill is a basketball guy, but his passion for and insight into the Patriots made him relevant in my sport, football. I was jealous over the years. My envy turned into tiny bits of occasional disdain for Belichick and the GOAT, Tom Brady. I root against the Patriots, and that bias creeps into my point of view. I convinced myself that Giselle would force Brady into retirement. I thought the Malcolm Butler Super Bowl decision would undermine Belichick's grip on the Patriots. I wanted Antonio Brown to act as a sleeper cell, a Manchurian candidate, a Trojan horse, and tear the Patriots down from the inside. I prayed to Father Time and begged him to pay Brady a visit. Now, I'm just waiting on my luck to change. It has to. Bill Belichick can't keep putting me in a clown suit. He can't keep taunting me. I was in the Gillette Stadium press box in 2008, the day the Chiefs safety, Bernard Pollard, injured Tom Brady's knee and ended the Patriots dynasty, or so we thought. What the injury actually did was create the myth of Matt Castle. He filled in for Brady that year, won 11 games, and caused my Chiefs to give up the 34th pick in the 2009 draft to obtain him. Kansas City signed Castle to a $60 million contract. He was awful. Ooh. In 2009, he threw 16 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and fumbled the ball 14 times.
Lord.
I nicknamed him the original sin. It took the Chiefs 4 years to admit Castle was the original sin of Scott Pioli. Pioli, the Chiefs' general manager, was another former Patriot who plagued my favorite football team. This is a long-winded way of me saying I watched last night's game and I saw more signs of hope that the Patriots' dynasty is ending. Brady looked relatively average. He threw an interception and fumbled the ball. Against another bad team, New England's defense had to bail out its offense. The Patriots won easily because they blocked a punt for a touchdown and ran a fumble back for another score. This isn't a great Patriots team. I remain hopeful the dynasty ends this year. It's inevitable. My luck has to change. All right, joining the desk now is former Patriot Rich Ornberger and Hall of Fame running back, GOAT conversation guy,
yes,
Eric Dickerson. All right, Marcel, let's get us started. Will the Patriots offense cost them a Super Bowl this year?
Ah, did that sign you held up in 98 almost cost you your job? You left that part out. Come on, Whitlock.
That's true.
Get on Google for that one. Let's talk about this Patriots offense, and it's unbelievable that you're still in doubt mode. One of this team in totality, if you think about it, winning three of the last five Super Bowls and now being undefeated this year, the machine, the Patriots, never doubt them. But let's talk about their offense explicitly. Their offense, it's different playing offense than defense upstairs. We all know that when you go out there day one, draw it in the dirt, the defense has an advantage. See color, hit color. You look at this offense right now, what I think is happening is the metaphysical, which is mentally it's hard to get up for every single team. When we look at this team and say it's a lowly team and they're an injured team that's not that good. So between the ears offensively, you have to think a little more. Therefore, if I think less of you, it's harder for me to get up. I told you yesterday how difficult it is in professional sports to do the expect it. When you're playing against a team and everyone says, mail it in and you can still win this game. To do just that. We give so much credit to the unexpected, to the underdog that does a lot more than we expect. But what about the ones who we know are the dogs in the race and still handle business? I don't think their offense is going to cost them anything this year. They're still undefeated.
It's a game plan offense. It's a game plan offense. So
what do you mean by that?
Well, so the idea is week to week they change. They vary based on what the defense presents. So there are going to be some times where, and we've seen this before, we've seen it last season, where they're going to run the air out of the football, 40 carries split among their entire backfield. They're going to have wide receivers involved in the rush game. And then there's certain games where they put it all on number 12 shoulders and say, throw it 60 times today. We're going to need you because their pass coverage can't handle us. And so as this season proceeds, somebody has to look average on basically every single night to run a game plan offense. And sometimes, unfortunately for Tom Brady, he has to wear that jersey. He has to be the average guy. Mm. That's how it works. Now, don't get me wrong. It's the most important position on the football field. And rarely can you afford a quarterback to have an off night. And I agree with you. He did look somewhat average last night, but this is a team win for the Patriots. And it's the only thing that's spoken about. It's not about what the offense did this week or what they did last week or what they're going to do down the line or in the Super Bowl. It's what did we do today as a team to win? And that's exactly what we saw against the Giants last night.
People expect Tom Brady to go out and throw for 400 yards every night.
Why should
every time he played. You know, three touchdowns. You know, that's what they expect. It's sad that, you know, it's not sad. It's great that that's the expectation, but that's not the expectations. It is, but it's not. You know, one thing you just said, when I think about the Patriots, Bill Belichick, what makes Bill Belichick such a great coach is he takes what you give him. If you're going to give us the run, we're going to do the run. If you're going to give us the pass, we're going to do the pass. When I think about players that have played at the Patriots, when they leave the Patriots, the offense, sometimes even defense, you never hear from him again. It's like, he was so great, the Patriots, what happened to him? Mm. It's that system, you know, and that's why you have to give the Patriots credit. Hey, they're 6-0. It might not look like we want it to look, but they're 6-0.
All right, so all three of you guys are sitting here telling me that offense didn't look, not just Brady, but the offense didn't look poor last night. No reason for concern about the Patriots offense.
So let me ask you this. So every night that when Michael Jordan went out, he looked like Michael Jordan.
Yes,
every
he
night.
Did.
No,
yeah,
he didn't. Yeah. No, he did not. He might look like Michael
Jordan.
Even
on prom days.
Like Michael Jordan.
Even
no,
with the
no,
flu
he did not.
Even on off
no,
days.
No.
Rest days.
LeBron don't play like LeBron. Tom Brady doesn't play great. No one plays great. You know what the thing is?
Against the Giants.
It don't make a difference. You know it comes down to? The W. That's it.
I know.
They don't say, man, you know, they didn't look good. You know, they're going to put that next to it. They didn't look good. No. The win is.
You know what's also crazy about this game is, you know, when we have teams who go against a lesser opponent and they lose the way the Patriots could have lost this week, we say, yeah, but they're hurt. They're injured. We find ourselves so rarely in that circumstance where we say, yeah, but the excuse is the Patriots are injured. They're injured. They're thin at receiver. They got bumps and bruises on the offensive line. Tom Brady was under duress last night. He was moved off the spot many times, was sacked. He was harassed. And they still got the win.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about this
thanks
team.
Thanks to their defense.
Well, it's not thanks to their defense.
The defense scored twice.
Well, let's go here. One, I say, is between the ears, especially offensively. And this is a lowly team they played last night. And even the Buffalo Bills, which was a struggle, is a team that they had won 30 of 33 games against with Tom Brady. So even though coach is saying, get ready, and you're psyching yourself up, you can't lie to your primal sense, your primal essence that knows, man, we should beat these boys. So when you're playing something low, it's harder to jump high. Think about it. You're going against something that you already know, not as good as others. But when they went against the Pittsburgh Steelers, week one, prime time, Ben Roethlisberger and those Steelers new and reloaded, 30-3, 20-0 at halftime, mashed them down. This is what this offense can do. The greatest point differential since the 99 Rams.
Whew,
that's the greatest show on turf. So if you're trying to tell me that this offense is not good enough, they wouldn't be in those kind of categories with some of the greatest offenses we've ever seen.
Super Bowl. Let's go to Super Bowl that the Patriots beat my Rams in. You know what the Patriots did? They did what we should have done. They ran the football. We're going to take what you – and the Patriots not really a running football team. But that day – They ran the football. That's how they beat us. And we, you know what we wanted to do? We wanted to throw the football. So, like I say, Bill Belichick is the best. Whatever you give me, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
They played coverage that night. I mean, the Rams played coverage. They went two high safeties in that Super Bowl. And I'm sure, Eric, there were times where you were on the sideline, you went back to your OC and said, hey, guess what? If they're going to play zone, we're going to run the football. And that's exactly what they did. They take advantage of the situation.
Always.
And they're the best at
it. Y'all making it hard for me to get to the next question because y'all sitting here, there's no problem. You know, Brady didn't do anything. He threw it, turned it over twice, but there's no problem. There's no... And so I almost feel silly asking this question, but they brought it up last night. Gronk, before the game, said, you know, he hasn't ruled out returning. Robert Kraft, the owner, said he's still praying for Gronk to return. Mm. And so I'm asking, can Gronk fix a Patriots offense that doesn't need fixing?
I'm about to say, right. Certainly you put Gronk in this lineup. You put Gronk in this locker room. That's juice. Unfortunately, you can't get into football shape unless you're playing football. And he's one removed from playing football. Physically, he's not playing football. Mentally, he tapped out of football. And once you turn that main engine off, it's pretty damn difficult to turn it back on, especially when you're in the trenches and have to deal with those rigors. So I'm looking at Gronk like he's keeping the door open because he saw what happened with Jason Witten. He basically like, look, it depends on how my other gig goes, and that's going to dictate how this gig is going to go. It's just that simple. Jason Witten ran out of options, so therefore, it was either go back home with the wife and kids or
man,
let me go play some football again. What I'm good at.
Listen, you got a chance now. You were talking about AB being the Manchurian candidate. Gronk right now is with Fox. Maybe you program, send him into the organization. I don't know if that's how it works, but we'll see. Look, here's the deal, though. Gronkowski, if I'm the Patriots, this is the song I'm singing in his ear. You're not coming back and sullying your jersey on the offensive line with all those other brutes blocking in the box. You're a receiver now. You've lost all this weight.
Yes, he has.
Let's get you out on the outside. Let's get you in the slot where you demand attention and coverage. Let's put you on the wide side of the field, away from the boundary, right? Let's see coverage roll your way. And look, you're going to catch the ball 10 times a game, maybe. You'll get hit. You'll get hit 10 times a game, maybe. But you'll be a decoy. You'll draw coverage. We will throw to the high percentage middle of the field, in between or near the hashes, in between the numbers for Tom Brady, where they want to go with the football anyways. And we'll go and win another Super Bowl. How does it sound, Robbie?
It sounds horrible to me if I'm looking at it. Like, if I'm a D coordinator, I'm like, yes, do that. Gronk will be RoboCop with syrup on it, going uphill in the cold. He will be so Jason Witten look a mess right now trying to run. You imagine Gronk, who was never the fastest, more of a, like a 4x4 out there, just having a lot of power, a lot of torque. But now you put him on the edges. I don't know who wants to guard him, but I think it's going to be a long line of guys saying, I'll take it. I got him first.
Yeah. I was wondering how Gronk got open. I'm like, he's slow.
He's open when he
always got open.
He did.
He's 6'7". He's open as soon as he steps
man,
on the field.
Man, no, the funny, gigantic. You was, like, they just showed the highlight. He was behind that. He was behind that. They got behind that defensive back. Man, I don't know.
No, I know it.
And with Gronk help. But you don't think they need any help.
They don't. They're 6-0. They don't need no help. And they're in the weakest division in football.
Let me tell you who agrees with me.
Who? You?
Robert Kraft. If Robert Kraft didn't see a problem, he wouldn't be praying for Gronk to return.
Man, he liked Gronk.
First of all, Gronk is box office. Let's just be real.
Exactly.
Gronk is so box office, he got
all. Oh, they need help at the box office, the Patriots.
Who that has money doesn't want more, first of all. And if you talk about Gronk being star power to your team that's already undefeated, that's just a cherry on top. Gronk went out there in the pregame, and this is why he's not leaving Fox. He went out there and talked about squirrels, and y'all know what he talked about. Yeah. And it landed, and it was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it was on brand. This is going to go so well for Gronk holding the mic. I don't think he ever returns to the field.
Gronk has already said he hasn't ruled it out. Robert Kraft is praying for it to happen. And Tom Brady, this week, when they cut Ben Watson, was already irritated.
Yeah.
Tom Brady and Robert Kraft want Gronk back out on that field, and I bet you Bill Belichick does, too, because unlike you three, Belichick, Brady, and Kraft, but like, hey, man, this offense ain't good enough.
A ninth-ranked offense is not good enough?
It's not good enough.
Top-10 offense, not good enough. Okay.
They got to face Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. They're going to have to score some points.
The Colts, they go against the defense, don't they?
That's right.
That defense is real good.
And the Colts, I don't know if you watched the game, but they sort of gave us the blueprint how to beat those Chiefs.
Yeah, trust me.
I mean, moving Mahomes off the spot. Oh, my goodness.
But look, they – Belichick and them are smart enough, man. They're not falling for this. They're playing a bunch of scrubs. They've beaten up a bunch of scrubs, a bunch of baby seals. Mm-hmm. They know – Robert Kraft knows – we need Gronk, or he wouldn't have said it. He let this man enjoy his retirement.
Didn't you say something about betting? Didn't you just say that on your opening about betting?
Yeah.
You're going to lose again. You're going to lose again.
You set yourself up for a big loss. It's a win. And Gronk is box office. I understand an owner's plight to want more stars on your team. Right now, as Colin put it earlier, I mean, Tom Brady's thrown to a bunch of guys with Z's in their last name. I mean, multiple Z's. That's not a good equation here. Get Gronkowski back out there. I mean, for crying out loud,
He's got a ski, though.
Now you got to get him off the slope.
Eric Dickerson's back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Rams, who host the 49ers in a huge divisional matchup Sunday afternoon on Fox. Sean McVay and company have dropped two straight, with Jared Goff and Todd Gurley both struggling. Meanwhile, Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G have the 49ers off to their first 4-0 start in almost 30 years. And the Niners are actually besting the reigning NFC champs in a number of categories, including total offense and dominating LA on the defensive side of the ball. Wow. All right, the question here is, will 49ers bury the Rams this weekend? Eric, prepare yourself for some disappointment and some tears.
Yeah.
Y'all about to lose three in a row.
Okay.
And 49ers are beat up at the offensive line.
Yeah.
But I think Nick Bosa and that defense are going to be a problem for the Rams. I like the 49ers here.
I like the 49ers, too. I like the Rams, too. I am stuck, like, literally on the fence, ripping my pants on this one. The Rams have never lost three in a row under McVay, so we understand that. The 49ers are beat up at tackle and fullback, so that's going to have impact. But this means more for the 49ers, so I'm going to lean that way. Their first win against a playoff team from last year, if they get it this weekend against the Rams. So this proves not only are we leading the division, but we're really tier one in the NFC. So I think there's an investment there. And if you look at the Rams internally, and I know you could talk about this, Mr. Rambassador, something's going on with Todd Gurley more than what we've already said for weeks and months. Todd Gurley comes out this week, 5 days post-game, with a quad injury, which catches McVay and the organization off guard. Now, meanwhile, he's telling us and discovering this quad injury, he's wearing a shirt that is a deflection, a shirt that says, what is it, not concerned about athletes on the shirt, which is trying to take the attention away, or maybe it's trying to bring the attention to not only on the collegiate level, but even on the pro level. They don't care about athletes. There's a little Jalen Ramsey back issue going on with this quad to me, and I'm smelling something, but I need the Rambassador to decode it for me.
Go ahead and ram it.
Look, first of all, let's talk about the game.
Okay,
first.
Please.
You know, please. The 49ers, they're a good football team. You know, they haven't really played anyone yet, but they're a good football team. Their front seven is very good. I think they have all first-round draft picks on there.
Yeah,
so, and Kyle Shanahan's a very good coach. You know, I don't like to say great because he's a young coach, just like our coach is a young coach. But they're beat up at tackle, fullback, and they run the football a lot. And the way they run the football is with a lead blocker.
Yeah.
And that lead blocker is out. So what they'll have to do now is possibly try to bring in a tight end to block, if they want to do that, have a lead blocker. Tight end's not used to getting a three-point stance, coming out of the backfield trying to block someone. So, you know, that part, their offense is going to slow because their offense is made up of running the football. You know, Jimmy G, this is really like his first year as a full-time starter. He's been good but not great. When I look at our offense, we have more weapons. We do. Only problem with us is we have some injuries too. I mean, losing our linebacker, whatever his name.
Not Dante Fowler.
No, he broke his jaw.
Clay Matthews.
That hurts our defense.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, we have more weapons on offense, but now we still have to contend with Aaron Donald, our guys up front, trying to run the football against an offensive line that's beat up. So for me, I think we'll win this football. I think it'll be a, I think it's going to be a defensive battle. I think it'll be a shootout. Let's talk about Todd Gurley. Man, people said that Todd's hurt. Is it Todd's knee? He's got an arthritic knee. He's that. He's this. I said this from day one. Todd has been fine. Now, this is something new. I just heard about it, just like I think everybody else about the quad injury. I've had a quad injury for myself. A quad is something that can come out of nowhere. It doesn't happen right away sometimes. It may happen like, you feel like, man, my thigh is killing me. It could be a pull or it could be a contusion. That's not saying he's not going to play. If he doesn't play, I got to say, I have faith in Malcolm Brown. I mean, that's why we didn't let him go to the Lions. That's why they matched his offer. So, for me, we're good. I mean,
I don't think anybody has mentioned the Rams' real problem. You know, it was mentioned in the setup, but there's a guy named Jared.
He went to Jared.
That's a problem. I don't know if you get well against this 49ers defense and this pass rush. Jared Goff is an issue. They need to do something to get his confidence back and get him rolling. That's why I lean towards Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan.
Well, I want to combine the issues of Todd Gurley, whether there are some personal issues or just in production, with Jared Goff's issues, and really look at the issue with this team. Offensive line. We know about the names last year. This offensive line run blocking grade is second to last in the NFL. And their pass blocking grade is third to last in the NFL. This was a top offensive line last year. So what's happening is you're not getting the same protection or the same running lanes. So neither one is playing at an optimal level. Are they going to be able to fix the offensive line against a first round defensive line rotation that is coming at them? It's going to be a tough task for them.
It will be a tough task. You know, losing Robert Saffold, that was a big loss. You know, our center's hurt. So, you know, we got a lot of new pieces as well. As you play defense, but, you know, on the offensive line, those pieces, it's like a chain. They have to all know what each other's doing.
Continuity,
And we're hurting. We're hurting there. But I think with Jared Goff in this game, they have to get the ball out quicker. We can't have those five-step drops. You got to get the ball out quick. You got to run screens, draw. But we got to run the football. Mm. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
We got to have a running. We got to find a way to run the football.
Behind the second work line.
Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Dickerson's back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst, former Cincinnati Bengal, T.J. Husmanthada.
No.
That's for our security staff. Let's move to Cleveland, where the Browns host the Seahawks Sunday with a lot to figure out after getting dominated by the 49ers. Odell Beckham Jr. had another disappointing game with just two catches. But Freddie Kitchens clearly tried to get him more involved, handing him the ball, and even letting him botch a punt return. Yesterday, Baker Mayfield said he wants to get Odell more completions, and Odell and Jarvis Landry both vented about OBJ's role in the offense.
I feel like I was brought here to help this team win, and that's all I want to do. So if it has to be handoffs, like, it's whatever. Just finding ways to have successful plays, not just give me the ball to appease me or anything like that. It's more about having success within the game and within the team.
I'm not, you know, calling plays or designing anything, you know. But at the end of the day, obviously, he's a key part of our offense, whether he's the ball's in his hands or not. You know, we got to find ways for other guys to continue to make plays. But, you know, the way that it's been going, we haven't really been making enough plays without him touching the ball. So we definitely got to find a way to include him even more in the offense and be intentional with it. You know, it doesn't matter if the defense knows it. You know, we got to be intentional with getting the ball, getting playmakers the ball, period.
What about just being intentional about winning? The game they looked the best against the Ravens, Jarvis Landry balled out. So the question here is, will concern over Odell's role get in the way of doing the right thing and just going after the win?
Absolutely. Not only Jarvis Landry balled out, again, Nick Chubb. I mean, remember in the running game? Like, it's crazy, this frustration that is brewing out there shows how inexperienced Freddie Kitchens must be, because this frustration is really responding to a simplistic offense. Oh, it's not working as we designed it. Get the ball to Odell. Wait a minute. We've won other ways. We can do this a different way. So it doesn't show complexity to this offense when these guys are this frustrated. So what I'm looking at is, why are you so quick to abort the plan? And what is the plan? And it's almost Pop Warner-ish to sit there and say, we went through OTAs, training camp, offseason, we believe in the plan. Oh, it's not working. Get the ball to Odell. He's our playmaker. That's what we used to do when we were 9 years old. You know, sweep right, sweep left. Get it to Wiley. Get it to whoever. You know what I mean? That's just the mentality that I'm hearing right now. And they're force-feeding the mind of Odell. And then that's going to try and follow up by force-feeding him the ball. And we saw what happened in San Francisco when they tried that. Not good results.
For me, it can get in the way of them winning. I don't look at it the way everybody else looks at it.
Please, yeah, you're a receiver.
He should get the ball. That's just the reality of it. But it has to come within the flow of the offense. You don't want to force him the ball. With this being said, it's going to affect Baker Mayfield now, because if right. They're in the second quarter and Odell doesn't have the ball, he might not say anything, but his body language is going to say a lot. Mm-hmm. And so he might not pout, but his body language is going to be pouting, and Baker will try to force him the ball. It should be something like this. You call a play. You work all week in practice. We anticipate this coverage and this down and distance. When we call this play, everybody in the huddle knows who the ball should go to. Coverage can take that away. If coverage takes that away, you don't get the ball. But Odell should know, oh, that play was designed to go to me. Move him around in the slot. We're trying to get you the ball. If it doesn't happen, oh, at least he knows this play was designed to go to me. It's not so much about getting him the ball. It's about showing him, I'm trying to get you the ball by the play that's called. Because when you practice plays, you know in the huddle, oh, yeah, this is my play right here. Oh, coverage takes it away. Like the first play of the game they ran against San Francisco, a reverse pass, he don't want that. Make him be on the receiving end of that pass. Don't make him throw little things like that. It's what you said. Freddie Kitchens is so inexperienced. It's not about coming out saying Odell needs to get the ball. Mm-mm. We need to try to get him involved. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Because if you force it to him, you're going to get run out the game.
Yep.
Well, first of all, it's about the team. It's about football's ultimate team sport. And when I look at the Cleveland Browns, it starts with the offensive line. Their offensive line is terrible. And what I think about this football team is you have a commodity there that you brought there to be a superstar on this team. Well, really, to me, Cleveland is really a running football team. Nick Chubb can show he can run the football. What they really should do, and this might sound crazy, is trade Odell and get some offensive linemen in there. Make that team that would make them a better football team right away.
What's crazy about that?
Because
lineman you gonna get that's gonna help you?
But he's not helping you. He's not helping. Because now you get your quarterback beat up. So you ain't gonna have no quarterback. I mean, if they keep getting him hit like he's getting hit, he's not gonna last. When I think about the New Orleans Saints, when they traded the tight end, Jimmy Graham, traded Jimmy Graham to get an all-pro center, and they got a top draft pick. Mm. I think the Saints got the better deal of that, because you got to protect your quarterback. They have Jarvis Landry. This is, to me, the Browns are a running football team. And Odell, and I got to give him credit, he's handled this like a man. He hasn't complained, you know, hey, man, I'm not getting the ball. Like, and I think that's
publicly,
the people.
You're right.
Yeah, but still, he hasn't. Mm-hmm. He's handled like a man. So you can't even blame him.
When all of a sudden he's catching punt returns and then fumbling that? Well,
hold it.
This
is the thing,
he
though.
He asked coach to do that?
When you get back there, the coach probably put him back there. You know why?
Because
the coach knows he ain't getting the ball. This is a way to get you the ball.
He and asked coach, though, TJ.
And when you're
first.
Not getting the ball, when you finally get it, I'm going to try to do something with it.
And
damn, I done fumbled.
Okay, this is more similar to me, and y'all got to walk with me here. Odell is dealing with a quarterback that doesn't have a ton of equity. Let's just be real. One week we love Baker, one week, Baker's is really standing on some thin ice here. Where he left, say what you want about Eli, he had equity. He could force a 50-50 ball. This reminds me of the Dallas Cowboys when Dez Bryant got that young quarterback in Dak Prescott. And all of a sudden, Dez couldn't separate or get open to get the ball. And he's like, yo!
Got sorry overnight.
Got sorry overnight. And Romo used to throw the ball in there because Romo had equity. Franchise quarterback, contract, everything. He will force that ball to Dez. Dak got in there and was like, I don't know, bro. I know I can, but I'm not. Baker is in that place right now. Odell is extremely frustrated. He just knows he has so much baggage, he can't play that card anymore. But him going up to coach, he could do it with a smile. But that's frustration, hey, coach. Put me in a position I don't even really do that much, and let's see what happens.
Eric, I don't think there's anything crazy about your suggestion. He's a bad fit for Cleveland.
Exactly. And he's a bad fit for Cleveland.
And Cleveland already has their wide receiver in Jarvis Landry.
How can a good player be a bad fit on any team?
Because he needs the ball.
Every player needs the ball.
If I'm a running back and I'm on a passing football team, that doesn't fit. That's a bad fit.
You're still going to run the ball.
It's still a bad fit. If they're known to the offensive line is set up to pass block, not run block, and they are. That's a bad fit.
And he won't get the ball with the number of carries in sync to get his flow now, going because we're pass happy.
I've always been a firm believer. When you're winning the game, the running back's going to eat at the end because you're going to run 15 times for a six-minute offense. And so that's where you get your yards. For me, you just have to design plays that are designed to go to him, whether he gets it or not.
I love that point. I love that point. But I want you to speak to, because you've lived this experience.
Yeah.
You've been Jarvis Landry opposite Odell Beckham Jr. with Chad Johnson. I thought Marvin and the Bengals struggled with Chad.
And the thing is, it's crazy that Jarvis came out and said what he said. Mm. Because I remember in the game, I was getting every ball. I remember, and I went to the coordinator and Carson and was like, man, let's try to get Chad to rock. I remember this vividly. During the game, I was getting every ball, and Chad hadn't got the ball yet.
Damn, you better
and
than me.
I wanted him to get the ball.
TJ, do you remember how many playoff games y'all won?
Ooh, I know.
None.
I know. But,
and donuts. In it. When you start having them type conversations.
But
when you look
is.
At.
That's how it is.
For the Bengals.
And you don't want to throw people on the ball. We win playoff games if we can stop somebody.
Oh, here we go with the
info. We're top five. You don't win games by getting rid of good players. Period.
TJ.
You make it work.
Let it go.
Some things don't work. Some things don't work.
Up.
Let it go, TJ.
All right, Darnell, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Colin Kaepernick, who is still out of work, and now his agents are venting about it, sending out a press release outlining their efforts to get the QB back in the NFL, saying they've contacted every team in the league with no luck, explaining, quote, not a single team has brought Colin in for a workout. Seattle brought Colin in for a visit, but did not work him out. No other NFL team has interviewed or worked out Colin in the past three seasons, despite other false statements to the media to the contrary. In 25 years, I've never seen anything like it. I want to ask you guys, what's your reaction to this?
He hasn't opened his eyes over the 25 years, obviously, because there's a lot of guys that feel like they should be in the NFL that can't get an NFL team to return their call. This all feels orchestrated and... You know, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, was tweeting about this yesterday. And some FCS quarterback's going to start in a primetime game and Cap can't get a job. Mm. Man, Cap can't open his mouth. Quarterback is a talking position. It's a leadership position. You can't do it with tweets. You can't do it retweeting people. They don't let you go into the huddle and retweet the play call. You got to talk to people. And this dude won't talk. He's not a leader.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, look, when this happened yesterday, I was like, why today? And, you know, I was thinking that all day yesterday. Why today? And then I was skeptical of the intentions, you know, and I was like, oh, interesting. What I don't like is... It reminds me of growing up, and every single guy that it didn't work out for always said this. All of them. Man, coach tripping. Coach tripping. I'm like, nah. And while I'm listening to my boy talk, I'm like, nah, you ain't that good, cuz. But I'm going to listen to you. Coach tripping, this. Cap is a grown man who played in this league and is saying the NFL's tripping. Is it tripping? Because, like you said, there's such a long line of guys who just can't make it for various reasons. And my equation is always this. You're not employed in the NFL because of what you can't do and how you go about your business in that time. So we make it in the league about what we can do and our issues minimized. But then that turns. That seesaw flips. And then it's about, oh, you're not as good in these elements, but how you go about being a professional while you're on the downside. And that's where I think Cap got himself exposed. And these excuses and these reasons are just commonality to everyone else who's sitting on the outside with their own list of issues and indiscretions. But I can't give validation to this because you had your chance. Why wait 2 to 3 years to send out a list of facts that are absent of facts and reasons why you're not in the league? It, to me, it just seems disingenuous.
My reaction to it was, I was somewhat like you, like, I wonder why they put this out today. And I guess I might be a minority in here. I believe you should have been given an opportunity to at least sink or swim. You weren't given that opportunity. You are not going to be given that opportunity. That ship has sailed, in my opinion. And so why now? It's unfortunate. When you do what you did, you have to understand there's going to be consequences.
Yeah.
And the consequences can be good or bad, and you have to deal and accept them. The consequence is you're not going to be able to play in the NFL. And you should have thought about it before you did what you did. They're not going to give you an opportunity to play. I believe you should have been given an opportunity. It's been so long. You're not, nobody's signing you. Nobody's going to give you a chance. What you did is great because you brought awareness when people weren't bringing that type of awareness to the situation. But as far as you playing in the NFL, it's not going to happen anymore.
Man, I told you this when this first happened on this show. I said he will never play again. Do I think he should have an opportunity? Most definitely. Here in the United States, they always believe in second chances. They give a killer a second chance. They give a no-good, dirty pedophile a second chance. He should have a second chance, but you got to understand this. This is the NFL. We know this. The NFL and the players are like, the NFL's up here and the players are down here. And NBA is pretty much even. Baseball is even. But in our sport...
Stop it there.
Hold up. You know, nigga, hold up. Can I finish?
Go ahead, Eric.
Can I finish? In our sport, it is... And look, it's not... I don't say slavery because it's all different.
Oh, Eric, stop
it. Can I finish?
Stop it, Eric.
And slavery, anyway, beating you over the back. I say you're beating you over the back. Look,
you've lived a hell of a life because of the NFL and football.
Can I finish, please?
Go ahead, finish.
Can I finish? I'm not saying, but what I'm saying, is that he should have had an opportunity. I'll just give you a good example. The owner of the Texans, what's his name? The late Bob McNair.
Yeah.
He said, you cannot let the prisoners run the prison. These are not prisoners. These are men. These are NFL players.
Okay. Are you done yet?
No, I'm not done
Go
yet.
Ahead.
Can I finish? You know,
if you wasn't a Hall of Famer, I'd cut you off. Go ahead.
You got to respect that game.
But you like, man, you know, the thing is that I think that for me, it's like, I agree with this. The ship has sailed. The ship is at the bottom of the ocean, but he really should have had at the Titanic.
It's like the Titanic.
It's the same as sailing.
It's at the Titanic. It's at the bottom of the ocean.
Man, we all suffer the consequences of the decision.
I cracked
a joke about this a couple of weeks ago on the show, and I'm just sitting here thinking about it now. His little list of blah, 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 and we're talking about. I'm telling you, man, there was a girl I really liked. And I tried to holler at her cousin. And I spent 2 years begging, writing letters. Here's my list of facts. Please reconsider.
She was like, I'm cool.
No, I'm good.
You made that decision?
Live with the consequence.
I couldn't get back in the league.
And that takes me to one more issue that I have with
this. That's a hell of a point.
It's fact.
It ain't gonna happen.
Like, why'd I do this?
You was never in the league.
Right.
Like, and it's crazy because that parallel is interesting, that every sacrifice comes with a consequence. And now we want to be absent of consequences when we make a sacrifice. That doesn't add up. And other guys who did the same thing you're doing, is actually, some of them are still playing. So it's not uniform in the consequences that came from kneeling. But here's my biggest issue. This NFL, this league that he sued, NFL that he settled with, and this NFL that he wants to be a part of, is the NFL that is also blackballing him, and he's like saying negative things about it or allowing that to be the connotation. But this is the same league that damn near made you a superstar. I ain't even say star. He was between star and superstar. And if that's the league that now that you want to tear down until you get your job, what is the core issue? Unemployment or the fact that the league really is discriminating? Because that's what's getting clouded here. This league propped him up to the point where
He was on GQ covers and winning. He had Beats commercials and winning. But this is the same league that now doesn't want a black man or you to actually be a part of it? It doesn't add up, Cap. And we know why. You know why. It's just, like you said, the ship is where?
It's at the bottom, the bottom of the ocean.
Let it go. XFL draft, October 15th and 16th. Get your butt ready.
Cap, man, talk.
Now, I agree with that.
Come out and talk. Prove to me. This little letter doesn't prove to me that you really want to play.
3 years later.
Talking wood.
Come on, man.
I would be fair. Anybody would be fair to you. Let you talk, but please talk.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined by Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher. All right, let's move to the NBA, and it's China crisis. Yesterday, Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr responded to the mocking criticism President Donald Trump directed towards him for his refusal to comment on the China controversy engulfing the NBA. Kerr expressed shock and disappointment that Trump called him out.
It was really surprising, but mainly just because it was me, you know. And then you stop and you think, well, this is just every day. This is just another day. So I was the shiny object yesterday. There was another one today. There'll be a new one tomorrow, and the circus will go on. So it's just strange, but it happened.
What Kerr fails to acknowledge is that he is part of the circus, too. He has not been a spectator. He's acted as a lion tamer, trolling President Trump at the behest of fawning media and social media apps rigged to reward anyone willing to go toe-to-tweet with the president. Kerr thinks his brand of trolling is superior to the president's.
If we had been thinking earlier, I was going to ride in on a tricycle with one of those beanies with the propeller on it, and just because he called me a little boy.
To the ears and eyes of at least half of America, Kerr and San Antonio Spurs head coach Greg Popovich have been childish and smug and snarky in their political commentary. They behave no differently from the president they abhor. They live in the global elite bubble that makes it impossible for them to recognize their own obvious hypocrisy. Led by Kerr, Popovich, LeBron James, and their media sycophants, the NBA has spent the past 5 years wagging its finger at the NFL and posturing as the Nelson Mandela of sports. Mandela did 30 years in prison, standing on his beliefs. Muhammad Ali spent 3 years in exile from his sport, standing on his beliefs. The NBA folded the moment Yao Ming and the Chinese government indicated it had a problem with Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeting support of democracy seekers in Hong Kong. Choosing democracy over communism is now a complex geopolitical equation that is best answered by savvy politicians.
Generally, my feeling is the things I'm going to comment on are things I feel very comfortable speaking about, things I feel well-versed about.
Steve, we're talking about freedom and self-determination versus communist oppression. This is a fundamental and foundational American belief. Daryl Morey didn't wade into Israel versus Palestine. Steve, you sound like a clown in the circus.
And that's why I love being an American. That's why I love my country. You know, I'm able to channel my energy and my resources to places where I want it to go. And I feel really comfortable with that. But there are places where I don't feel so comfortable. And this would be one of them.
Steve, you do love being American, but you clearly respect and fear China. You're a freedom fighter up until the very moment it costs you, the NBA, and Nike a dime. Either shut up and dribble or admit you're just a clown in the circus. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us rolling. Does Steve Kerr look hypocritical here?
Yeah, he does. And I think it's not so much about what he's saying, but the spirit in which he's saying this. It just looks hypocritical because it's awfully convenient to hide behind the unknown, the plausible deniability of sort of this situation, when from where he stood as a basketball coach, a lot of people thought he was shooting a long three in terms of distance from where he was and his acumen and his involvement and understandings of the complexities of American government, but he would take that shot. And now we're saying, look, where's the long three now when it comes to China, which is the simple understanding of what a communist country reflects and represents? He doesn't want to take that same shot because he's not comfortable, not invested. We understand that's not your locale, but your understandings, if they're sophisticated enough to be of this acumen level with American politics, they're not with this, and this is communism we're talking about, kind of simple. So I just look at Steve Kerr and saying, kind of been bullying the yard domestically, and then we take you somewhere else, and all of a sudden you're uncomfortable with the same spirit. Maybe he doesn't have to go into detail, but certainly the penalties and the punishments have made him pause in these moments.
Before you go, he's willing to fight Apollo Creed, but not Ivan Drago.
You said it.
So for full disclosure, I've known Steve a long time. We've worked together on broadcasts. I've actually been mistaken for him at times, which I appreciate. I appreciate more that now that he's coached the Warriors to three championships than I did before when he was a journeyman with a couple of rings. All that said, is there a seed or even maybe a flower of truth in what you're saying about are they picking their spots? And, we'll stay with Steve in particular.
Yeah.
Yes, the fact that he's not speaking out on China or on Hong Kong as a result of the NBA saying we collectively are not going to speak on this at this point, for sure. But what I've appreciated about Steve is that the things that he has spoken out on are things that he does have firsthand personal experience and knowledge with. Gun violence, his father was shot. Issues in the Middle East, he lived there. Discrimination or people saying awful things to each other. When he was at Arizona and after his father's death, Arizona State fans were chanting PLO and your father's history. He knows what that feels like. And I had dinner with him not that long ago, and I asked him, how often do you think about your father when you talk about gun reform or gun violence? And he choked up. And that was all the answer that I needed. So the fact that this is the problem that I have right now with people saying that the NBA, because they haven't supported Daryl Morey, are not fighting for freedom of speech, or because Steve Kerr is not speaking out against China and Hong Kong, it means that he endorses it. I don't see it that way. If you say, look, I'm not well-versed enough to take a position, I'm going to allow you that, and I'm not going to look at the motive behind it, even though I agree. Look, I agree with you. Right now, the NBA is operating as a corporation, and Steve is operating as an employee of that corporation. And the corporation has decided we're in crisis management mode because of the tweet that Daryl Morey put out there. So you know what? Before we do or say anything more, we're going to collectively gather ourselves and then decide how we're going to go forward. And I dare say most everyone would do that.
Why isn't this an option, though, Rick? This, I would have respect if Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, hey, guys, this is a complicated business relationship that the shoe companies and the NBA have. I can't comment.
Right.
Be honest. Oh, I'm not comfortable. I'm not well-versed. Mm-hmm. Communism versus democracy, that's not complicated. Mm-hmm. Or we really need to evaluate our school system and educational system.
We need to do
because people are lost.
Sure.
If we can't understand that. So just, hey, this is a complicated business deal, millions of dollars on the line for the people that support me in the sport of basketball. I'm out.
Yeah, and that's my issue with it. That's why I say in spirit. How well-versed are you in the intricacies of American politics and government and every Trump decision that we see you take that shot at versus now this is one that is kind of simplistic. It's pretty easy. It's pretty elementary. And now you're not taking that same shot. And don't tell me you're not taking that shot because you haven't taken shots from that distance. You have, in terms of understanding, in terms of involvement, in terms of knowledge, you have taken that same shot, maybe even closer. But now you're sitting there saying, no. And we know the reason. That's the problem. We all know the punishments that come to corporations from China. So now don't act like that penalty is not being part of your restraint.
Sure.
Admit that, and I think we have a greater level of respect.
And if that's where the argument is, like, just be clear as to why you're not speaking, as opposed to reading into why he's not speaking and his position on freedom or America or his love for this country. The one other aspect that I will say is just because I speak out on one issue, does that mean I now, if I speak out against racial injustice, does that mean that I then, if I don't carry the flag for drunk driving, that, hey, wait a minute, I thought you were a social justice warrior, how come you're not speaking for everything? Or can I not pick my battles based on what means the most to me?
Well, you can't pick your battles if you're saying racial injustice, because what at the core of racial injustice is a lack of equality, a lack of respect, a lack of a level playing field and humanity. So if I'm going to fight domestically for a color humanity issue, I need to fight for a greater humanity issue no matter what your color is internationally. That's when you get caught. You
know,
That's when you get caught.
And I'm good with that. But my problem with all of those who point the finger at someone like Steve Kerr or anybody who's not saying, well, you're not talking about the oppression of China. Okay, are you, what are you wearing right now? Like, but, the shoot, not I, you, I, no, no. I'm I, saying I anybody who's wearing wearing clothes in this country, anybody who's using technology, you know what? But you're Rick, benefiting from our relationship with China.
China. I don't,
so ease
I don't,
up on how come you're not speaking out against this.
Got it, Rick.
Because we're benefiting from it.
Got it, Rick. But those very people, there are people out here watching, it's like, hey, man, we're not, that's not the argument we're having here. That's not what we're pushing back against. This guy has smugly, with snark, viciousness, gone after the president and the United States of America and has smeared the presidency. And there's a lot of people watching that believe that.
Sure.
And there's like, there's no consistency here. And don't play dumb on me now. You're a very smart person, Steve Kerr. Yeah. And this is where I come in on this issue. He's as smart as I am. He knows more than I do about basketball and what's really at play here. And again, I keep telling people, if they really want to go all the way here, we can go all the way here because Steve Kerr knows, just like the people at Nike know, there are trade agreements with China and the United States of America. You go back to TPP and what Nike wants to have happen with those trade agreements.
Sure.
And that's, again, why I keep seeing these Nike athletes smear President Trump. It's about trade agreements with China that adversely affect Nike. Trust me, Steve Kerr's not, he's not oblivious to this. So I wish all these guys, Greg Popovich, very smart. Tap out here, be honest. Don't hide behind some BS, oh, I'm not comfortable, I don't know. No, you're not in position because of basketball's relationship with Nike to say a damn thing about any of this.
And look, this is the battle of principles. There's the principle with the AL has now just won and complicated over the principle with the LE. Now, before, if you look at Steve Kerr, you thought he was always being led in spirit with the principle with the LE, how I really feel, despite consequences, despite how it can help me. But now it looks like, oh, I have to now curtail that because of what the principle with the AL, the money, and how that's going to affect the economy of what I do.
I can only speak for myself and how I viewed what Steve spoke about.
Yeah.
And it was because of his personal experience and that that's why he was such an advocate when it came to gun control and gun violence. So I can't speak on the larger issue. I can say that I, of all the people that are watching, I've spent more time in China and spoken to more people in China than 99% of the people watching and 100% of the people that are on this show. And so I believe, and I don't pretend to be an expert on China. I would not pretend to be that. But I have spoken with them enough, and it was alarming to me to discover that their perspective, whether it's on Hong Kong, whether it's on freedom, whether it's on rights, is different than ours. They don't have the same perspective. And so when I hear someone like Steve Kerr or anybody else say, you know what, I need to know a little bit more before I speak on this, I can appreciate that because I had that discovery myself. What I thought was not the reality of how they view things. And I don't want to get into all the all the politics when it comes to that. But that's why I look at this and I don't see a potentially an inconsistency. It comes down to what do you believe the motives are? And if you believe that Steve's motives for not talking about China are because he's protecting his pocketbook, then you're going to look at it and say, well, you were willing to speak out on these other things, and now it's just about money.
It's always about the money, in my view. TJ Houshmandzadeh is back. Let's move to Kansas City. where Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs host Deshaun Watson and the Texans Sunday. It's the first time the two young guns will meet on the field, with Watson playing at the highest level of his career, while Mahomes just went through his toughest game of the year, losing to a Colts team that held the Chiefs to 13 points. All right, the question here is, think Deshaun Watson and the Texans outshine Mahomes and the Chiefs this weekend? And I do.
Yeah, right. I really do.
No. Marcel, this is I picked the Chiefs against the Lions. I picked the Lions. They played poorly and won. Didn't like the Chiefs this past week against the Colts. Mm-hmm. They lost. Chiefs defense is a problem. Deshaun Watson, Laremy Tunsil, DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Stills, William Ford. They're going to have something for the Chiefs this Sunday in Arrowhead.
All right. How long are you going to 8 Mile this, fan man, and try to beat yourself up and get you? I'm going to punch first. And if the Chiefs win, oh, okay, but I'm going to punch again. You know, like, you're not fooling me with this. I love you, man. Chiefs going to win this game. I know that Houston has a lot to prove that they're a tier one team in the AFC. And certainly a win against Kansas City in Arrowhead would do that for their confidence. But the thing is, I look at their defense, especially in the pass defense, only 2 interceptions all season, and that's at the bottom of the NFL, bottom 5 of the NFL. So you look at Patrick Mahomes, say what you want about him. Some people were saying, looks just as good as last year. The numbers say maybe even better than last year. 300-plus passing yards in his first 5 games with no interceptions. Ooh, that's insane. So look at this guy who's trying to get back on it. Tyreek Hill may play this week. Just that energy alone, that presence alone, I say the nod goes to the Chiefs.
Man, I'm with you, Whitlock, on this one. And I'm going to tell you why. Tyreek Hill might play. He's a game-time decision. Yeah. Sammy Watkins will not play. Chris Jones will not play, defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. And so Deshaun Watson's coming in there with everybody, full arsenal.
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills. He has all his weapons. And so when you look at it from this perspective, you don't know who Patrick Mahomes' ankle injury is. He going to be all the way healthy. Mm-hmm. Eric Fisher out from core surgery. And so you just don't know what Mahomes is going in the battle with. He's going to rely on Mecole Hardman and Travis Kelce. They're going to take Kelce out of the game. Romeo Crennel comes from Bill Belichick. Let's take your best player out of the game. Yeah. He's going to take him out of the game. And so when I look at it from Deshaun Watson has more to work with going to the game, at least right now. Now, if Tyreek Hill play, things can change. But looking at it now, I got to go with the Texans.
And I can already envision it. Deshaun Watson is going to make 3 different plays with his feet, and it's going to be the difference in the game. And in the fourth quarter, he'll run for some first down that's going to put him in field position to get the game-winning field goal.
Woo! I mean, if we could redo this segment, the way you guys are convincing
the crazy. It's hard to win a game, as we both know, in Arrowhead. It's tough.
The only place they ever gave you aspirin. I was like, why are you giving me aspirin? I'm good. He's like, watch this. Chiefs. And I was like, oh, God, it's loud.
No,
nothing louder than that. But we just saw Indianapolis go in there and beat them in a primetime game. So it can be done, obviously. I just think that the Kansas City Chiefs, They're missing their parts. You know, you ever try to put a toy set together for your kids and you're like, damn, where's this boat A? And you're looking for it. Boat A is coming. It's Tyreek Hill. I'm telling you, Tyreek Hill gets to this offense and then the safeties say, okay, 5 more yards back. The corners say a couple more yards back. And that just opens up everything.
I'm just sitting here. we've been talking about this for 5 minutes and we didn't even mention J.J. Watt. And I'm telling Eric Fisher being out. Mm. And I'm just telling you.
And Mahomes' ankle injury. He's not going to be able to escape the pocket like
so
that.
And so I'm not out on the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Just right now, this is a bad stretch. They don't have the right pieces. Their defense is a problem. In order for the Chiefs to be the Chiefs, they got to have all their personnel. They got to have the right pass protection. They got to need Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
I just think this kid, Deshaun Watson's on a roll, and it's going to continue this weekend. All right, Darnell, what's up with the Super 6 this weekend?
Yes, sir. Terry Bradshaw is actually adding a second Super 6 NFL Sunday game this week to celebrate the Panthers-Bucks game in London. Before that game kicks off Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time on NFL Network, download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for a chance to win. Whitlock, Marcellus, who wins that game and give me a score, Panthers or Bucks?
Panthers 20-17.
Ooh, almost the same. I wrote mine down. 23-17 Panthers. One Kyle Allen's out there, they don't lose.
Don't have to defense. Kyle Allen. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Tom Brady.
You.
Come on, man. It's Friday. Let me start my weekend on a good note. Give Marcellus Big Dummy today.
Yeah? Tell you what.
Don't do that.
Big Dummy go to the person that said that Steve Kerr and Pop need to tap out. I'll tell Steve Kerr and Pop to tap out next time you tap out during Thanksgiving. I'll go for a plate.
Four? Take a nap on the floor.
All right. Let's
night-night.
Let's talk Tom Brady. Oh. Who didn't look great last night, but still got the win over the Giants.
W.
New England is now 6-0. And to start the year with a relatively easy schedule the rest of the way. All right, Marcellus, you think they go 16-0.
Oh, you that person? I hate when people in the movie are like, how's this going to end?
I don't know. Shut up and let me watch.
Yeah, they're going 16-0.
Really?
They're certainly going 7-0. They got the Jets next week. Let's start there. They're going to keep these wins
coming.
That's
a good
start. I just think this team's a machine right now, offensively, not hitting their full stride, injuries and just inconsistencies, but defensively, good Lord, and special teams. So two-thirds of the equation is already filled out. Yeah, this is the team. This might upset the Miami
Dolphins.
They're
not going 16-0. They may only play one tough game, but they're going to lose it at some point.
Right.
Whenever that happens. Maybe it'll be Baltimore in early November.
Look out, 72 Dolphins. They're coming.
Uncle Jimmy, back me up. You know Tom Brady was garbage last night. You know he was mediocre.
Look,
not
man,
going 16-0.
Listen here. You know what San Mateo is?
San Mateo.
Yeah, it's a city somewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like it's over there in Cuba, right?
Yeah.
Wrong.
It's right here.
That's where Tom Brady was that's where he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Idolizing Joe Montana.
Okay.
See, now I was watching the game last night, and it was at that point where I had my epiphany.
Your epiphany.
What's her name?
Epiphany.
What's her name?
I had my epiphany. I was sitting in my favorite Huey P. Newton wicker chair.
Yeah.
I was about 11, 12 cans deep into my 12-pack of Slits Genuine Drafts.
Yeah.
Slits. And that's when I realized, I said, Tom Brady ain't no damn Joe Montana. Tom Brady's Tony Montana from Scarface. You know, I mean, look, I saw him last night, man. He threw the ball to Adam. I said, fly, Pelican, fly. You know, and I sit up and I saw Brady in the Patriots locker room last night.
Yeah.
And that's when it dawned on me. He's sitting in the locker room like this, and he like, this it? This it, Julian? This is all we got to look forward to? The hunting? The scoring? The hitting? The socking? Then what? And you look up, you're 67 years old. You look like Belichick. You got a bag for a belly. You got man boobs. They saggy. You need a bra.
Oh, wow.
Them things even got hair on them. You know, you done seen them in the shower. Hey, listen. It's okay, Doc Ellis. I know what you think, Doc Ellis. Look. All I got to do is throw a couple of touchdowns. He going to love me again in the morning. It's going to be okay. Forget him. You know what, man? Look. Forget him. Forget you. And forget the freaking Manning brothers. Those little cockroaches were never my little friend. Okay? Look here, let me tell you something. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your little fingers at me. You know what? You don't got no rings on your fingers. You don't got no rings on you. You look at my fingers. You know what you look at my fingers and say? You say, there go a real bad guy right there. You know what? What are you? You good? You're not good. You just know how to hide. You know how to lie. Me, I'm a goat. I always tell the truth, even when I lie. So, hey, I'm here to tell all of y'all in the NFL, say goodbye to the bad guy. Come on, everybody, right now. You, over there, big boy. Everybody, say goodbye to the bad guy. Good night. The bad guy leaving the joint. I see you later. Hasta la vista.
All right. I've still got Brady at ghost status. I still have him at ghost status. Dropping a few points, but still a goat.
Oh, man, forget
you
that. Forget
fly,
Brady ghost status.
Fly?
Yeah, that's my goat right
that's
there.
That's what I talk about right there,
keep
man.
Keep going, Jimmy.
You tell him what I say, Darkless. You say, you get up, you got lightning bolts flying all around. They know you the doctor. We love you, man.